Welcome to the M3 Podcast. Your journey to movement, mindset, and medicine starts here. Welcome back to another episode of the M3 Podcast. It's me, your host, Mermaid Bree, and I have Dr. Luz Maria Villanueva, see?
That's right, Luz Maria Villanueva.
I love your Instagram handle. You go by Discover Passion with Dr. Luz, and you are a life, sex, and intimacy coach, a psychologist, a sex educator, and a tantra sexologist in training. What is tantra sexology?
There's different areas of tantra to start with. There's the education when it comes to the Hinduism, and then there's a Buddhism, and then kind of tantra just grew, and there's different types of lineages. The one that I've been developing and worked with was a Buddhist, and they actually looked at five chakras. And then what I'm actually doing more further training now is more of a Hinduist lineage. And the reason I'm really excited in terms of what Tantra does for people in general, there's a lot of breathing and there's a lot of somatic healing that goes. Now, we actually have that also in psychology, but there's new things that Tantra does for us Westerners that I believe to be very healing. So that's the reason I'm actually got into Tantra.
Did you have your own spiritual journey that got you to this level of understanding different practices?
Yes, I do have a spiritual. I think there's two things that got me here. Going to this world of sex education, especially being Latina and talking about sex, that is one area. And then there's also what got me here in terms of spirituality. I'm Catholic, like Latinas. My father was a Jesuit priest. So I went to Catholic school. So that was kind of like my upbringing. And a lot of young Latinas follow the norms. We follow the rules. And especially growing up in my era, which is also a little bit different than what it is now. I was your good girl, respect, do as you're told type of thing. So that was my upbringing as a young girl. One of the things that showed up, kind of like how sex and spirituality came for me, is that I had a lot of people, because I started being educated in psychology very young. I graduated from high school at 16. So at 17, I was already at the university. So I had a lot of parents and family members asked me to help educate a lot of our own family. Then I started to work really young in Vista, California. And because I speak Spanish, they asked me, hey, Luz Maria, do you mind doing a sex education for our community? So here is an 18, 19-year-old going out there teaching on sex education. So somehow sex started to search me, like mom, family, like, hey, you speak Spanish. Do you mind doing this? The church in Tijuana actually asked me, hey, we heard that you do sex education. So then they asked me. So somehow that conversation has showed up to me. So when I think of spirituality and I think of the universe, it's kind of like the universe continually knocks on the door. Hey, Luz Maria, you feel very comfortable with this subject. And we need somebody to talk about these concerns and these issues. So I think both the education and my own spirituality and what I believe kind of start merging together.
I feel like I'm in a similar boat as you. Also, también soy Latina, and I grew up in a very Catholic family where it was never discussed, never talked about. Sex education was very much about biology and abstinence. And no sex till you're married, very much polite lifestyle. And I have a combination of both. My practice is love. If you believe in love and that's you're doing, that's who I am as a person. And the opportunities you've had to be able to speak in places where it's very hush-hush blows my mind, because when I saw that you were Latina and I was like, wow, this is something I actually see more branching out or unshelling, I should say, like the release of the shell, where it's so quiet and hush-hush that makes it more desirable. And if you look at the billboards or the ads in Latin American countries, it's very much a sexualized type of attention getting or seeking to get your opportunity to have that marketing available. So people are always putting something that makes it sexual so it can grab the attention, because I feel like it's more desired. It's not talked about enough. It's not open enough to people. That's just what I noticed. Do you see that too?
I do, because we live in a patriarchal society. We still do. And living in a patriarchal society, what is it that captivates a male? And it really is the sex conversation, the beauty of a woman. So you have that industry that continues to promote that part of our own feminist beauty of feminine, but it's actually been manipulated in a way to serve men in a way that also hurts the women. So it's not in a place of spiritual or being sacred, of being respectful and being safe. It really comes from that place as I own, it belongs to me. It's a dehumanizing of women. And you can actually see if we look at history and we look at the beginning, marriage is not from the beginning of time. And so you look at marriage and it was really to have men been able to who they're going to have their children being received, the heirs. So it was all about inheritance. So who is going to inherit my child? So I need to make sure it's my biological child. So marriage came to be to make sure that this woman will be with me and stay with me and biologically would have my children. Therefore, women became a source for the use of men. Their bodies became for men. So yeah, it's so you look at the billboards, you look at everything we're talking about. We are seen as that in this patriarchal society as service for men.
I believe you're an author to the book. It is Let's Talk Sex and Money. And I feel like this is a great explanation that goes into, I believe sex is a very powerful energy. It's a very creative, very exploratory energy, but it also gets us to be confident and own our power. And yes. I see this very much in relationship with money and the patriarchal society as well.
Yes. So the book is coming out real soon. I'm really excited. I'm glad you asked about that. Yes. It's called Let's Talk Sex and Money and Reinventing Conversations. And the reason I selected to write this book with a friend of mine, it's another Latina who is an expert in finance. It's because the biggest concerns we have in our society, the ones, the big talks are sex, relationships, anything has to do with relationships. The other one is finance. And the third one is health. So if we're to say those are the three things. In this book, it provides a framework for individuals to have conversations. Because there's like a chapter and it does the history on sexuality. And it's a very small chapter. So it's not like you're going, oh my God, I have to read history. But it's enough information for couples or just friends to read the chapter. And then from there, there's questions for you to start having new conversations about these topics. Like, be able to say, you know what? I understand now why we're in this patriarchal society. I am a mother of boys. So when I talk about this, I don't put down men because it's like putting down my own boys. I've been able to understand how we have evolved and where we are right now. So that's what each chapter in this book does. It kind of gives a very short evolution. It does a little bit on biology. It does on communication. And then the finance. My friend who's a finance expert also does this lot of history of finance. And then there's questions that you can sit around and you have this framework that's there. So yeah, that's what this, I'm so excited about the book. It should be coming out within the next 2 months.
I can't wait to buy it. I'm so excited. I'm going to be sharing this all over and that will be perfect for when this episode drops too, probably around that time as well, maybe even just right before. So my question is about sex education in general. And you just mentioned the word that's popping out to me is questions, but the phrase in itself is we need to ask the questions. We don't know what we don't know. So when somebody is starting out a sex program or beginning this journey of trying to figure out maybe some sort of healing or just understanding, they don't know what to ask. They don't even know what kinds of questions to get really deep in those different parts of themselves and how to ask the inner questions like, what do I like? What don't I like? Maybe what my partner is or what's safe. And kids, even especially, you know, growing up, and they have that access to quote unquote sex education, but it's very much biology. And I also feel like STDs and abstinence. So what do you believe should be in there in those environments teaching sex education?
Well, to start with, it's not even the full biology. they just mention so basic things when it comes to sexuality, not the full biology. Now, part of the reason is that we are just beginning to explore more information and more research is coming out. So what we knew back, let's say up until the 80s and 90s, and what we know now is totally different. So you have a lot of books kind of being the old, still fashion. And because society right now, culture, there's so much arguing over what should be right or what is not, and religion and playing a role. It's really, really a hard political, personal way to respect your view and also what should be put in the education system. I do believe biology needs to be explored and needs to be expressed a little bit further than what it is. Because when you understand biology, it allows you to ask further questions, even just from a scientific perspective. Let me give you just one example. The clitoris. The clitoris, people don't even know what the clitoris looks like. They think it's just a little pea. But the true size and the real appearance of the clitoris, which is something I actually drew it in my book, didn't even come out on a lot of the biology books until 2000. So this is what the clitoris looks like.
Wow.
And this is how big it is.
That's, to me, probably 20 times bigger than I thought.
Yes. And then the only thing that shows on the outside is the tip of it. But this is how the clitoris looks. So if the actual true in books scientifically written for the education have the full picture, then women know what this, boys know what this, and then understand or able to ask more questions is like, what's its purpose? I'm able to even ask, like, why women only have a clitoris just for personal pleasure? There's no other function. So if we're looking from a spiritual perspective, why were we given that for pure pleasure? If we're going to answer it biologically, we can. Because when you stimulate the clitoris, you actually release oxytocin. You get all over your body this oxytocin. We know biologically, oxytocin is what creates connections between people. So now we're actually having a conversation about the biology and the science, and we can even go even further. Now we can even go talk about research about how this connection actually works.
There's the tie-in actually- too for psychology for you. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So the more biology we really put, it really disconnects us from this fighting over and what the research shares. We talk about touch. We have the monkeys, rhesus monkeys. The monkeys, one that's just on a wire and the other one is on this little cuddly thing. And the wire one has the one that feeds. The monkey goes out there and feeds and go hugs and stays with soft. So what does that tell us biologically? Well, we know that releases hormones and makes us feel good. So we understand the importance of touch. And generally by adolescence, our mommies and our dads are not touching us, are not giving us that satisfaction. And our biology and our hormones shift and change. Therefore, we look for it. So our biology really answers. If you were to ask me what needs to be there, more of that.
I love that answer. And from a mental health perspective, why do you believe and how do you believe that sex affects our mental health?
Oh my gosh. So let me see where we start. First of all, let's say if we practice safe and healthy sex, one of the areas that when we're in that space, when it's a safe, healthy sex, and we're with our partners, doesn't matter what partner, whatever you choose, but you're in a safe partner expressing sex, and you allow, you give yourself permission to be vulnerable. You connect to your body. You connect. And what we have done in this society are all about brain, all about thinking, all about problem solving, all about that, which is nothing wrong. But we have actually, through the years, separated ourselves from the brain and the mind and the body. the reason I have clients that show up is because there is a disconnect with between mind and body. And sex starts in the mind and connects to the body. So it's a way that we connect to our body. And when we connect to our body and we have this healthy, safe relationship, it releases all of these amazing hormones and neurotransmitters that gives us life. It gives us joy and we feel good about who we are. And as long as we're in a safe environment, and if I know my partner loves my body as is, my mental health, and because that is the place where we are the most vulnerable, because we have society telling us, this is how we should look. Oh my God, look, you need to be skinnier. You need to be fatter. You need to be this. Just gives us this whole thing. And I'm not talking about health, because I know you're a health. We need to be healthy. I'm talking about the framework. So when we are in our own bodies and we have sex and our bodies are loved and connected, we feel good about who we are. Feel great.
Yes. So you spoke at a conference earlier this year. I saw it was a couples therapy conference, and I saw different topics on there too, including intimacy, communication, like you had just mentioned there as well. And I feel like there's a lot of tested boundaries that can happen, or people might want to evaluate, talk, and in a safe, healthy relationship, hopefully the communication is brought up. But where do you believe there's that fine line of figuring out the trust and building intimacy and bonding from there?
First, well, it needs to start with being safe with your partner. And you're not going to feel safe. At the beginning, you have hormones just kind of going everywhere. But when you're in a place of safety is when you can really grow. And I think that's the thing. Men are trying to push the agenda. Well, if you really love me, you would give it to me. You know, there's this pushing. So women is, well, I want to be loved, so I just give it to you. So I do things to please, not instead of to really owning my own decision. And the moment I give it to please, I'm not honoring my body, I'm not even honoring the other person. I'm not honoring the relationship and where this could go. So generally, men would ask that is for their own personal satisfaction. It's like, I'm horny and I just need me some. So, and that starts really separating us, and we start disconnecting ourselves, because what we end up finding in this moment of intimacy and the sex that we discover is so unhealthy, so unsatisfying, so hurtful to who we are.
There was also, I saw a topic on there that was talking about overcoming intimacy issues. What type of issues do you see as common patterns for people, and how do they maybe regain that trust? And I'm just going to even bring up a little bit of my own thing is I've had some serious past sexual traumas, and I'm still in the process of trying to rebuild trust, have a safe, healthy relationship with myself, and build that trust factor so I can give that to someone else, knowing that I'm not giving away my own power.
Well, one of the thing, of course, is we have to recognize that as women and men, because, you know, when you have partner relationship, men and men also, that occurs, you know, or trans, it's the same thing. The first thing is just to really start honoring ourselves and recognizing that we need to say no, and it is okay to say no. And because when we have someone pushing and we feel that, and if right at the beginning in relationships, when you're growing, they learn that there is a no, they learn to start to learn to wait. And one of the things that happens that I see in relationships when they're married in a good relationship, women don't, especially after the organic stage goes away, they now have to learn to create in this new space how to wake up their own sense of eroticism. And if they're like being pushed, there's no space to be able to feel like you can breathe and create that. Because women have to learn how to explore that. How do you actually wake that up? So it's how do you create those boundaries? It's by saying to your partner, I'm not ready for that. And if partners learn to say, what makes me a great lover is to wait, because that makes them a great lover. Because the moment that man or that partner that waits, because it could be the other way around, when you wait, you are actually creating this space for the partner to get ready to be able to join you and be able to create amazing experience in the sexuality. That's like, okay, if I can take my time, it's like, oh, okay, I'll join you.
I love that. And the fine line between pain and pleasure, I feel like they're derived from very similar spots. And so people like to test where they can push their boundaries and hopefully in a safe place, again, be able to do that open communication and have the ability to say, this is my safe word, or this is as far as I'm willing to go. But I do recognize that there is a point where people have that fine line between being choked or being tied up or just different types of things. There's kinks involved. And I would love for you to explain what a kink is to people and to talk about that fine line between pain and pleasure and setting boundaries.
First of all, it's really important that people know that it is a game and yet you choose it. This is not a lifestyle. I think what a lot of people get when they say, I'm into kink and I'm the dom, or I'm the submissive, you know, the dom dominating, a submissive submitting to the dom, is that that's the way you live your life from the morning till night. Now, there are those that choose to live that, take on that role, but it's in a safe environment. It is that. It's like the number one thing. And when you really understand the experience of being in that arena, the one that rules is a submissive. It is not the dom. And if people believe it's the other way, it is because the submissive is the one that is going to accept this physical, either the slap, whether it be a whip or whether it be a paddle, whatever it is, that person is the one that is going to be accepting. Therefore, they are the ones that need to say, not anymore. I'm still sore from last time. I don't want that. And the dom needs to understand that their role is to create that energy for the submissive and also to care for the submissive. So that is sometimes that is not talked about. I've actually had some clients. I had a client that watched porno. And they watched porno and they saw all of that and they went to the toy store. And then he said, I want to create this for you, with no education, no awareness. So he did. He went and he bought, and she's like, well, you know, I'm not too sure about you doing this. I'm not sure. So they did. They went in a hotel and they started to be intimate. And he was so excited. He bought a whip. He got the cuffs, tied her up totally, put something in her mouth, like cover her eyes, never had practiced it, never knew any roles in it, and just started hitting her. So it was really an abusive situation. So one of the things that does happen, it is a consensual thing, and there are some couples that even sign contracts. You have to be very much aware that this is something you really need to educate. So for those that want to go in that space, you really need to take the time to learn how to, because you can't just hit anywhere. You can't hit the knees. You can't hit behind the knees, you know, on elbows, on the face. It has to be on a large soft spot, mainly the butt and the back. And if they are not trained and you don't know how, all you do is create injury. So this game of that could be very pleasurable becomes just this horrific experience. So the submissive says, I will never, ever allow you to play this with me. And the dom also needs to understand that's not how it goes. So I've actually have had clients that come in because they had a horrible experience, or those that be learning to, like, how can I start this? What is my safe word? And pineapple. Majority of them love the word pineapple. So pineapple is a very popular safe word.
I'm trying to remember what movie that's from. I forgot about that. That's so true. I'm just giving an example here, and it could come from this intimate couple or maybe even just a scenario hypothetically. But let's say somebody was having intimacy issues in their relationship. Going about doing things with kink might not always be the best solution. And I'm curious, what do you believe are the best ways to go about overcoming intimacy issues? Because I feel like there are other ways to be intimate besides being physical or even maybe exploring more sexually too.
I'm so glad you asked that question. We have looked at sex as just the penetration, a penis going inside the vagina. So what that has done, it has disconnected us from the real experience of intimacy. And see, a lot of men derive a lot of like, how do I feel that connection, like that monkey, you know, that love? And they don't ask for that. And somehow they even feel a little disconnected, but they want to be held and loved. And the only way to get to that space is really by having sex. So I think the first thing is that men or even women, because it's not just one, need to understand that there is this desire for intimacy, and desire for intimacy does not always equal to penetration. Intimacy really is about connecting with one another. It's the feel of the oxytocin and the dopamine and serotonin, all these amazing chemicals that come just through being together and enjoying each other, of touching each other, what it looks like to really enjoy a kiss and lean on each other and just stay there for a while. Now you're creating these amazing safe spaces and connections and giving room to really discover what it would look like in different areas and in different experiences. And this new definition of intimacy is so important, because I see that, Bree, with my older couples, when some of them has a medical issue. For example, you have people that are in dialysis and have lots of high sugars to where, and cardiac problems to where they no longer can actually take Viagra. So they're not even having an erection. Yet the body and the mind still wants to be intimate. And because there's no erection, they think sex died. And it doesn't. It actually, a lot, I work with a couples like that where men learn to be the best lovers. Because it's not just about penetration, it's about touching, it's about kissing, it's about having conversation, it's about being intimate when you walk, it's about all these other aspects of life that get to be created. Then they become the most amazing lovers that they've ever been before, because that's not included in the package.
That's a whole nother level of love right there.
Yeah.
So these couples that you see that are building trust and communication and they're setting proper boundaries, how are they able to allow more creativity and play into their lives in and out of the bedroom?
I give a lot of homework assignments, and depending on the couple, what the need is a homework assignment. So if it's a couple, let's say I get a couple whose economy is not very, you know, they don't have a lot of money. So I teach him to go on a date with $40. So he gets to decide. One makes the decisions and then the other one pays for it. So they get to go out and they say, okay, we're going to have fun with $40. So it's really going back to like when you were in high school and you had no money and you get to have fun. It's like going with some sandwiches and sitting by the water. And then I create questions, things that they have never talked about or they forgot to talk about or a dream they want to talk about. So that type of experience, it's about playing in the car, remembering when they played in the car, waiting, creating the mood, you know, what that would look like. It's about creating a game. I call it the key game. And the one that ends up not having the key is the winner. And the winner gets to decide what's going to happen in the intimacy. So they actually go to a party and they get to hold on to this key. And you go to your partner and you say something naughty, and then you give them the key, and then they have to hold the key, and they have to wait. Yeah. And nobody knows about it. So then they wait around for a little while, and then suddenly they find their partner, and then they get to say something naughty or naughtier, and then they give them the key. So now they got the whole, like, oh my gosh. So then they go and maybe they'll go out there and say, oh my, you know, something cute or beautiful. So they get to play around saying things to each other and see who's going to end up not having the key. So it becomes a game. Life becomes erotic. Life becomes fun. It becomes joyful, you know. And so by the time you're in the car waiting, or, you know, the other person is, oh, yes, if you only know what I have in mind for you, what we're going to do tonight. And it makes it fun.
What about somebody who is not in a relationship? How can they find intimacy and trust within themselves?
That is such an amazing question. There is a lot of individuals out there, and dating has become an issue or a concern. It's really different because of the apps. Apps have really shifted. In fact, there's a seminar I went to that talked about the impact that this is having in our society. So we're having actually a lot of people be by themselves. So women or men are learning to really take care of themselves as a consequence, which is really good. So how to be intimate with oneself? One of them is understanding pleasure, that life has different aspects of pleasure. So when I work with somebody is they tell me what they have. And the majority of the women identify pleasure through eating. It's like my pleasure is through eating. And the other ones is through watching TV. So then they get to look and discover so many other ways life has pleasure just for them that has nothing to do with sex, and really be able to hold that moment. So it's like going out for a walk and looking at the sun, looking and enjoying and smelling. So using your senses to really enrich with what life shows you. What sounds have you not paid attention to? What smell is out there in your community versus another community that's different? So it's kind of like when you drink wine and you're just enjoying the wine, the different taste to it and trying to discover. It's the same thing about life, learning to enjoy things that are out there. And then also how to really start loving your body, like how to acknowledge your body and coming from a place of also being healthy. A lot of individuals will say, well, I don't care if he wants me if I'm fat. I said, there's absolutely nothing wrong, but is it because you're eating a lot of junk food? You're damaging your body. That's not also healthy. So owning your body, how can you take care of your body from a healthy perspective? That's another way. So it's really owning who you are and loving on yourself. And then it's taking warm baths. How does your body feel like connecting to your body? And then touching yourself, putting creams on. The joy of getting ready, that's what I call for women. The joy of getting ready to go out, you put your music on, you know what you're going to wear. And the moment you start, it's the joy of getting ready. Every step before you get ready, from the shower, from putting on the cream, the makeup, it's like really the joy of it. The smell, like, oh, I smell so good, is that joy. That's loving on yourself.
That I love to do. I think it's fun to do with girlfriends. I think it's fun to do even just by yourself because you're lonely if you're getting ready in the silence. And maybe you're nervous to go on a date, or maybe you're nervous to get ready for work. And there's parts of you that have communication. You're talking to yourself constantly. And so to be able to just be present and enjoy you as where you are in the moment, that's so intimate. That is very true. And I'm curious if you have any advice for someone who is single and ready to mingle. You mentioned that dating right now in today's world with all the apps, there's a lot of, I feel like, pressure, expectations, need for validation. It's changed.
It really has. Number one, you said it, the expectations. Everybody comes up with expectations, and the swipe left or right. It's like going through a book, you know, like, well, like him or like her, just go down the line. And this is true of anybody. And you get to say yes or no. So you have this that's there for you. And when you go with the fears and these expectations, and you go with this list of things, got to have this, check the box, checks the box, you never really got to meet the human being that was in front of you. You never got to meet. So I do believe that one of the things is when you find someone that has to, you know, always for women, meet someone in a safe place. Always let your girlfriends, mom, friends, whoever know where you're going and kind of keep an eye on what's going on and let the person know. I just want to tell you, for safety reasons, I always keep things informed with my friends. And then you go there and just have no expectations. Just really get to know the person. Bring questions of the things that you want to be heard. So the questions could be is, I want them to know that I'm an adventurer. So you ask them, are you adventurous? I want them this to get to know this about me. So you have that, and that's what you want to know about the other person. So you really get to look and never say because that person is very attractive or something, a yes to something, because all it's going to do is going to get you into trouble down the line.
Now, there's also couples maybe postpartum, or you had mentioned dialysis, or there's something that maybe one partner might be going through in their life, depression, all of that, and the other partner still wants to be intimate and maybe even feels rejected. I feel like that's where we get into a lot of the therapy, the psychology of it too, with being a couple and knowing that if somebody in your partnership is only able to carry 40% and you're able to carry the other 60% of it, what does that look like? What are the therapy processes of somebody who needs to maybe hopefully step up for their partnership? And I also wonder if there's other forms of therapy that people can do on an individual basis.
Yes, like when somebody just had a baby, you mentioned that's one scenario, there's hormones. We really need to educate ourselves. There's nothing like being educated, reading a good book, talking to your doctor. And some doctors are well informed, some are not, or you go and see a therapist. You really need to understand that your hormones and also the amount that life changes. Things are not organic. Your hormones are shifted. Things are not naturally bubbling up. You have a child that needs you. You have work over here. So you're in this life of got to do this and got to do that, got to do this. So it comes in the evening, pretty much the only thing that you really want to do is really go to sleep. And there's no desire of the sexuality. There's nothing new there for you. It's just like, I've been there, done that type of thing. So the only way to recreate it is to start something new in the relationship, to find something that brings newness into it so that begins to inspire both of you. And also the other partner needs to be aware that, let's say, the one that has a desire, the one that is not caring the biggest load, needs to be able to say, this is a partnership. We're in this relationship to have this partnership. And what can I do to be supportive? And what could you do to support me with my needs? It's these conversations and this aware that it is normal for someone to feel the way they feel. And it's also the other one. And it doesn't have to be one way or the other. It's what can we do together to make this so that I can heal, so that I can also feel loved? And you have a conversation.
Simple as that, you have a conversation.
Yes. Now, what happens if we don't have the education, the conversations don't go anywhere. That's where couples get into trouble. What can couples do? We have conversations in front of me. We do listening skills. One of the exercises I did with one of my last couples that I worked with, they had to share, and the other person just listen is like, what is my biggest desire? And then the person is, this is what I desire. And you just got to talk free about anything. You just desire, I desire this and I desire. And the other person needs to receive all of that. Create space and just breathe into that. And then once the person is done sharing all that, the person needs to mentally repeat everything that person said and breathe in and smile without saying anything. Then the other person gets to actually share, like, these are my desires. This is what I desire, what I desire, and I desire this, and I desire that. And the other person just receives it and breathes. And then on its own, just smiles and tells the other person, you desire this, and you desire that, and you just smile and you breathe it in. So it's been able to have an opportunity to hear. Key in communication is listening. So I teach clients by Listen, listen, listen.
Oh my gosh, epiphanies. Great. So you mentioned, obviously, the questions. It's the quality of the conversation comes from the questions that we ask each other. And that's because of the amount of education we've been able to receive, inform ourselves ahead of time. But then you brought it to a whole nother level when you said it also comes from listening. And I can't tell you how many times I've said it in the past from prior relationships. I don't feel heard. I don't feel seen. You're not listening to me. And I feel like that's where a lot of people might even start to argue or raise their voices because they don't feel heard. They're not being listened to or in the way that they want to.
Yeah, that's very common. We can even go in attachment styles, but let's just look at just what that is. That's very true for both individuals. Sometimes a person that doesn't feel seen, sometimes doesn't feel heard, they start talking because they don't feel seen, talking. And this person starts going away, talk, and going disconnect. And then all of a sudden, rawr!
I think I've been that person in the past. I've been told, why aren't you talking? And I feel like I'm talking in my head too. But then when it comes out, I feel like the need to speak up is speaking louder. And that's not always the case.
No, if you notice their fights, we feel like if I can get louder, I am going to be heard. And all it does, one voice gets louder, so then the other one gets louder, then the other one gets louder. And there's, we've learned those behaviors from being a kid. I do a lot of listening skills, a lot of work. So this one, please, couples, whoever, you know, take it on there. Use
Bravo.
It. Yeah.
Bravo. So last question, just to wrap it up. I love having you on the show. I'm so thankful for you. Is the advice that you would give somebody who is looking to explore or just step up and spice up their relationship? You had mentioned before about how there were partnerships where people just went to the sex store, bought the equipment and didn't do the research. So I'm guessing research might be a part of this too, but what would you suggest? And I'm also curious, is maybe it's a two-part question, but does pornography help relationships at all?
Yes and no. No, in because a lot of the individuals, mostly men, that watch pornography believe that that's how sex should look like. So what that does is you have a sex scene, and then within a minute, they're aroused and they'll watch the scene for about 3 minutes and they're done. And everything happens really fast because that's what sells. And somehow you want to take that situation and you bring it into a relationship, and that's not going to work. So then they start putting down women. You just don't know how to get it on, da, 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 da. So that's when porno becomes bad. Porno is also that I don't recommend. There's a lot of trafficking that goes for these women. And I want to acknowledge that the women that get drugged to do all of this porno. So there's that type of thing that goes into the porno that creates the damage for that. And it is actually made to sell, to make money. So what porno does, if I do the same scene, eventually it's going to get boring. So then I have to come up with something. So porno, what it does to create is I'm going to put something bigger. It's like, watch this woman have the biggest dick that goes inside them. The next one, watch this woman that takes a cucumber. Or all of these scenes that makes it bigger and wider, and they want to sell. And that's not reality. That's not reality. And that's what confuses when you don't have any sex education. It really is making money and is really creating conflict in the relationship. So in that perspective, no. Now, when could it be useful? Let's say there's someone that they're trying to figure out how to wake up their libido. And there's many different ways. And a woman may say, well, I just don't even know where to start. So you start with a visual. And the visual is, what did you watch? Some porno. Let's find something that you may personally like and see what that does to your body, just to start one way. So that could be like a way to kind of help a cue to get things going to help. So in that way, it may be helpful. But I would say it's more damaging than it is helpful.
I'm so thankful for having you on the show. This was huge too. So to be that person that listens, to be, you know, provide safety, create the space for others, let them know that you're there to comfort them, to be intimate, set the intention. I think that's all very valuable for people who are looking for a relationship that is intimate. And even with yourself as well, to set the mood, be present, appreciate the body, connect the mind to the body. And again, the soul is the tying piece right there. So I love that you are an expert in psychology, in physical, like as in sexual education, and to be the person who listens as well and gives these tools. So thank you so much. This is so cool.
You are welcome. Thank you for what you do too. I really appreciate that.
Okay, so you have your book coming out in less than, I mean, it'll probably be within weeks at the time that this drops. So for people to find it, how can they find you? How can they get a hold of this book and get it in their hands?
My Instagram is Discover Passion with Dr. Luz, and it's L-U-Z. And there's no period or anything, just one. So you can go in my Instagram and we'll announce it when it's going to go out. Also, my website is www.discoverpassionwithdrluz.com. So those are the two ways you can reach me. If you want to set up any appointments, you can go to my website and set up an appointment.
I love that. So you're taking on clients still. That's great. She is a coach. She's here to help individuals and couples combined. And I would love to participate in something where you're at another speaking event as well.
Well, that would be exciting. I understand you do yoga retreat.
I saw that in there too. I was going through your page on Instagram and I was like, yeah, so tell us about that.
I do Discover the Goddess retreat for women, and it's really to connect with our body. And the first day is about acknowledging all the ancestral hurt that we have experienced as women and to see where we have come from and where we're at now. And also to heal what men have to dealt with, those that were opposed and those that just had to do it for survival, and make amends with that. Also, the second day is make amends with other women, our sisters. We have become very catty with each other and very hurtful. You know, we have really taken the model of the Cinderella, of the witch and Cinderella, the bad stepmom. So, you know, we talk about those roles and how they're impacting our lives and not giving us permission to be who we are. And as soon as someone does show their femininity and their beauty and what other women do. So the first 2 days to discover the goddess is to look at our past, look at our present, and to heal those women relationships and men relationships. And then the other one is really about discovering our own anatomy. I really believe in that. It's really about orgasms. How do they even play out? How does this anatomy in our own body have to do with how we connect? And then we take on a goddess. When we get ready, you take on a goddess and you try to personify that goddess to be you. We talk about how goddesses back then, or even Tantra talks about, we have these emotions and these emotions belong to us and they have a function. Also in psychology, we know we have these emotions and have a function. Like anger and lust, they all belong to us. And we don't want to look down at them. We want to acknowledge them and understand what they serve for us and the power they have, either of them, and how that goddess, we personify that. And then so we look at that, and we have a ritual in the water. So, and they have one around fire. So that's what Discover with Passion with Dr. Luz does in the retreats. And I understood you do yoga retreats. Maybe you and I can do something together.
I love that concept very much. I think that's a great plan in the works that we should have happen. Yes.
So yes, it would be fun.
Thank you, Dr. Luz. Thank you for everything, for being on the show. And I can't wait to share all of your information. I'll put it all in the show notes for everyone listening. And we'll hopefully have you back here as we talk about retreat stuff more in the future.
Oh my God. Yes, that would be fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you for joining me on another episode as we learned and explored all things movement, mindset, and medicine. As always, my goal for each episode of this podcast is to share innovative tools and techniques to help you thrive and find stability with your overall health and personal development, alongside the growth of the world around us. Please share this with someone you know will benefit from this episode, as well as rate and review. This helps us reach more people and provide feedback as to how we can better help each of you. Make sure to check out our community website, www.mermaidmethod.com, to learn more about our upcoming events, eco-friendly products, and coaching programs. Now let's make massive waves together.